Well, the Taylor Report has a man in Africa, and his name is Lebony. Are you there, Lebony?
Yes, I am.
Lebony, thank you for joining us. You have just returned from the country that interests us very much. Well, one of the reasons it interests, by the way, is that demographically, it's the same country, like the country of Rwanda. It's a neighboring country, same. There are the ethnic story of Twa, Tutsi, Hutu, and you have also the colonial heritage of Belgium. And so when people hear you talk about Burundi, they want to keep in the back of their minds there's also neighboring country of Rwanda with similar issues. Tell us why they have decided to name the airport, rename the airport after Melchior Ndadaye.
Yes, hi, Phil. Renaming the airport after Melchior Ndadaye is very, very powerful and interesting for the country because Ndadaye is known as the father of democracy. He is the first ever democratically elected president of Burundi, and he was elected in 1993 through elections that were won by his political party in a landslide. And then after his victory, he offered actually the dictator president, Buyoya, the military president, he offered him, despite winning, to only be a prime minister and have him remain as president, Buyoya, so that his transition can go as smooth as possible. Because 30 years of military rule would be hard to just give up.
Yes.
And Buyoya refused the deal. And to make matters worse, a few months later, Buyoya and his gang went ahead and murdered Melchior Ndadaye. Mm-hmm. And his murder led to the war that broke out in 1993 that... Mm-hmm. Unfortunately led to 300,000 deaths.
Yes. And a second assassination in Cyprian Terimira.
Yes. So within 6 months later, and the president who took over after him, so despite having a coup under international pressure, they were forced to give power back to someone from the president's party. Mm-hmm. Now, when they killed the president, they didn't just kill him. They slaughtered most of the ministers were killed from his party. Mm-hmm. Ministers, the parliament members from his party were slaughtered. It wasn't just taking out one man. It was a systematical. Mm-hmm. And it reminds us again, the history of Burundi and coup d'etat is bloody. It's horrible.
Yes.
Because there was before Buyoya, there was a person in 72 who had made a coup d'etat. His name was Michombero. And after the coup d'etat, he slaughtered up to 500,000 Hutu.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first genocides in the region. The first one perpetrated by, not by Belgium, but a person killing his own people, and that was the first coup d'etat.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to remember every time when coup d'etats happen in Burundi, what comes after is just horror.
Yes. Well, and by the way, nothing happens in any of these countries without consequences for their neighbors, Congo, Rwanda. It seems to always ripple. There's always ripple effect. We're speaking to Lebony. You just recently returned. Now, you told me, actually, this naming the airport is a sign of some sort of political stabilization and maturity, is it not? And they are naming other public sites after people who they could not do it previously because of the political tensions in the country. Is that right?
It was not the political tension. It was the military. So, because
where I come from, that's political tension.
So, and here, this is something that for people who want to understand very well Burundi, there's a difference between the political class and the military. So when the Arusha Accord was signed, there were over 20, 30 parties that signed the agreement. However, that's in 2000. The war never stopped. The war kept going heavy. Got even more intense in 2002. You know, so the Arusha Accord did not stop the war. And what happened is in what the ruling party of today, which was the main rebellion, as well as the second biggest rebellion of Atherton Rasta, they both say these are just political parties. They don't have people on the ground. The problem of Burundi is not political parties. The problem of Burundi is the military. It was the military that controlled everything. And the rebellion was a response to the military. And it's only in 2003 when the ceasefire agreement, the Pretoria ceasefire agreement between the military and the current ruling party, the CNDD-FDD, that's when the war stopped. So the issue has always been military, the military controlling.
So it's the profile of the army has changed then.
So I found out some interesting details.
All right.
So the army was supposed to be 50% Hutu, 50% Tutsi after the ceasefire agreement. However, it never came up to those numbers. I got from a very confidential source that in 2015, the time of the coup d'etat, and Belgium was aware of that, Rwanda was aware of that, the Samantha powers were aware of that, the army was only 30% Hutu. And so when you hear Belgium and Paul Kagame of Rwanda jubilating and getting ready to mount a coup against the government, it's because they knew the numbers that 70% of
I have to ask you directly, why didn't they succeed with the coup? Because they, I remember now that you're telling us that we spoke to you at the time. There was a radio station in Kigali that was broadcasting into Burundi, inciting people. There, and matter of fact, there was a local station in Burundi, and it did enjoy the support of Samantha Powers and the U.S. government, but they failed. Why did they fail?
They failed miserably because they miscalculated the Burundi population. So within the Hutus, there's many divisions. And just as there's many divisions within the Hutus, there's many divisions within the Tutsis. Not all Tutsis were living well under the dictatorship of Moya. And they don't all think the same way. So in the military, you find out that a lot of former military in the army who are Tutsi, the most experienced one, had already gone through a war of 10 years with these guys, lost a lot of people, and did not want to go to war again. And they're the majority of them in the army. And the miscalculation that Rwanda had and Belgium had was just because the Tutsis will side with the coup. And it was false. A majority of the Tutsis in the army did not. It was just a minority of them who revolted. They did not. They actually protected the institution. You know, and so that was a big miscalculation that just because they're Tutsi, they're going to be supportive. But no, it backfired on them terribly, and a majority of them defended the government alongside the CNDD-FDD.
So, yeah. So, the other aspect of this is that. Hello, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
We thought we'd heard a click. So Samantha Power and really put a lot of her prestige of her government on the line. She made several visits to Burundi, but they were one thing they definitely were threatening was to use the International Criminal Court and to try to make Nkurunziza a target. And so the decision was taken to withdraw. And it's only these, I don't know how many years later, but I haven't heard any complaints or noticed anything from the Burundian population that it would indicate they think that was a bad idea. They think it's a good idea, do they not?
Oh, it was a great idea to pull out of that court. A really great idea. And one of the big mistakes that it's a matter of powers problem in and her group in trying to understand the region. They only listen to one side, and they believe that because they are very, I guess, educated, the mm-hmm. side that they chose to listen to is the only correct side. And for them, they only listen to one side that was telling them, oh, Nkurunziza is not popular, which is a lie. Oh, it's going to be an easy coup. We have the army, which was mm-hmm. a very big lie. And they believe that one side. Again, her best friend, Kagame, sees the same story since he was part of the people trying to involve the coup.
Mm-hmm.
He listens to that side. They're holy words to her. So he bought it. Mm-hmm. And apparently the one person who didn't buy it was Obama,
uh-huh.
who didn't go all the way in with them. And as soon as the coup happened, he rejected it,
mm-hmm.
which was pretty good. But one thing about, I think you were saying earlier how when these things happen in Burundi, they affect the whole region.
Yes.
There's a saying actually in Burundi that Burundi is a very small country.
Mm-hmm.
However, when it sneezes, the whole region catches a cold.
Mm-hmm. Well, by the way, they stood up. They certainly, at one time, it looked like there might be a shooting war with the government of Rwanda, but I noticed Rwanda backed away from that. Tell us, a lot of people want to know the Great Lakes region. You now have a new president in Congo. Is he viewed in Bujumbura? I shouldn't say Bujumbura. I guess the new capital is Gitega. Is that right? And what is the assessment of is Mr. Tshisekedi?
There's one word for Tshisekedi, it's immature. He's immature. He's come in without a very good understanding of the region.
Mm-hmm.
He's ambitious, very ambitious.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, he's fighting. He has a struggle for power in his own country,
mm-hmm.
and so he's trying to make some allies outside of the country to help him, trying to gain control of get power in his own country. I think eventually he will get there, but mm-hmm. He's going through so much right now, and you know, when he became president, Burundi gave him a congratulation.
Yeah, I think you said they were among the first, whereas Rwanda held back. Is that right?
Rwanda did not. Yeah, Kagame was the head of the AU and did not want to, 2 days before they could even...
Is he gonna close the border? He's closed the border everywhere else.
So he's looking for friends at Tshisekedi, and he's really extending his hand towards Kagame, who's the current president of the East African Union. Because Congo wants to join the East African Union.
Mm.
And one of the mistakes Tshisekedi is making is you cannot teach old dog new tricks.
Mm-hmm.
And like right now, I think it's on Wednesday, they've been trying to bring peace. Right now, Uganda and Rwanda have their borders closed as well. And there's a very big big row between the two countries. And he assumes he can just make peace between the two leaders, just like that. Obviously, they meet in Angola, they'll smile, but these are guys who have been in power for 30 years plus.
Mm-hmm.
They you cannot teach them new tricks. And that's when I say he's immature. The Great Lakes is very old. The politics are very old over there.
Mm-hmm.
It will take not just a little ambitious thing here and there to change the region. A good example is he told Burundi he's going to come to Burundi in March, never showed up, but went to Rwanda, I think, twice. And so he had a big military, the region of the Great Lakes, that a big military meeting, and he wanted to sign a very big, statement that concludes that we're going to fight all this rebellions together. And at the meeting, Burundi did not send its military. And so the fact that Burundi did not send its military, countries like Tanzania, Uganda were like, nope, nothing can be signed unless this country is here, because it's one region. and he was confused. Mm-hmm. You know, so he's really, he does not understand the region well. However, when you run Congo, you slowly by slowly start understanding the region better. And I think with experience, you'll know who his real friends and foes are.
Mm-hmm. I should ask you one other. Well, there is the relations between Tanzania and Burundi have always been very solid. Is that still the case?
Very, very.
And actually, some of those regional states are agreeing with Burundi on the matter of the International Criminal Court.
I mean, Tanzania has been Burundi's life and blood during the whole period since the 2015. They have really diplomatically. Economically, they've really supported Bujumbura all the way.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a little brother,
yeah.
And nothing has changed. They've really, really protected Burundi's interests at heart, and they might be the strongest ally out there so far. Tanzania and countries like Egypt, and Angola as well.
Yeah. Well, Lebanese, it's been great talking to you, and particularly since you've just recently returned. We were saying before you came on the air that all kinds of journalists come and go, but they only put their toe in and disappear. But you've been walking the streets there. You have family there. Maybe I'll ask you a twist question. The Wikipedia says that it's one of the least happy countries in the world. I heard you laugh. Is it? How would you assess it as a happy or unhappy country?
I think that is so politicized. You know, if you go to Burundi, I'm sure they have less suicide than Seattle. You know, people there, when I was there, obviously I went there for a wedding, but people there are, especially in Bujumbura, a beach city, a city by the beach, you know, there's many new openings, new restaurants, hotel, new events. I mean, it's a crazy summer fest going on in Bujumbura, many events, a lot of the diaspora. All the planes going there are full.
Mm-hmm.
All the planes going to Bujumbura are sold out, you know, because it's big summer, it's a lot of fun, and you cannot measure an index of happiness. Hmm. That's the most absurd thing in the world.
It is absurd. You're absolutely right. But I trust your word, and I'm going to write to WikiLeaks and straighten this out. Or Wikipedia.
Lebanese, WikiLeaks will do too.
Yeah. Lebanese, thank you very, very much. We look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you for having me.
Sure thing. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Taylor Report. We are on SoundCloud. We're on Facebook. And we're going to take a little break. I think we may have a little more Burundian music, and we'll come back to talk to Zafar Bengash about Kashmir.